Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
The importance of prompt obedience. The civil war is over. David is making his way back to Jerusalem. Victory, and yet there is strife. The sad reality of the condition of God's people. The men of Israel and Judah are arguing with each other. One strife, civil war, has just been settled, and now they start arguing over who's going to escort David back into Jerusalem. Their arguing is leading to another opportunity for civil strife led by Sheba. Their greatest problems have come from within. This is true of nations and individuals. Our greatest problems come from within. Can we please learn this valuable lesson so we will not be our own worst enemy? There's something rather interesting about this chapter, chapter 20, in 2 Samuel. One of the things that I like to do when I study a passage is outline the activity or outline thoughts. And you start to often see patterns evolving and helping you to understand the passage. For example, you can take a look at the life of Christ. You can look at it geographically. He's in this town or he's in this town, or, you know, you can look for time, whether it be a holiday, whether it be 3 days later or something, or you can break it apart and start to see interesting things that Scripture has for us. But there's something very interesting here I want us to get. 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 1, and there happened to be there a man of Belial whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite, and he blew a trumpet and said, "We have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse, every man to his tents, O Israel." We have just come off of rebellion by Absalom. He has taken 10 tribes of Israel, rose up against his father, and now he is dead. They have just settled this incredible turmoil in Israel. In chapter 20, verse 1, there is another opportunity. Sheba has got this horn. He blows it and calls for the people of Israel. "We have no part in Jesse." In other words, would you please see there, there is civil strife. The government is greatly strained. Chaos, rebellion, unrest. Please look at 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 23. We're at the end of the chapter, obviously. And here we have the well-organized government of David. "Now Joab was over all the host of Israel, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada was over the Cherethites, over the Pelethites, and Adoram was over the tribute. Jehoshaphat the son of Ahilud was recorder. Sheva was scribe. Zadok and Abiathar were the priests, and Ira also the Jerite was a chief ruler about David." We have gone from chaos, people up in arms, to a well-organized government. Do you think God's maybe trying to teach us something in this chapter about peace, unity, government, what life is like without government? If we think things are bad now with government, imagine no government. Listen carefully. Bad government is better than no government. Bad government is better than no government. There has to be law and order. Do I want bad government? Of course not. But I would rather have that than no government. So as we consider this chapter, we have to keep a mindset. God is apparently teaching us something about the importance of government and the operations of government. Consider that David, we know from our study, he is rightly by God's decree to be the king of Israel. We can go back to 1 Samuel chapter 16 when Samuel went to the house of Jesse and there he anointed the young shepherd boy. It is God's plan. David is the king. We saw earlier in 2 Samuel where God promised David an eternal kingdom.
This is God's plan, but we see men rebel against God's decree. And hence, in this case, now Sheba has arisen, and now there's a major problem again in David's kingdom. We're going to see in this passage, Amasa, as the captain of the host, was necessary to subdue the rebellion. David instructed him concerning the matter, and yet Amasa delayed rather than to respond immediately. Hence the title of our message tonight, The Importance of Prompt Obedience. If you remember, Amasa was once the captain of the army or the captain of the host for Absalom in the rebellion against David. And so it is, we have now Sheba rising up with men against David, because who's going to escort David? 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 4. Then said the king to Amasa, "Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present." So Sheba has called to the men of Israel, those who were once loyal, very recently loyal to Absalom, and now he seizes this opportunity. Whatever gain he sought from this, we don't know. He has arisen the 10 tribes, and now Amasa is to call together the men of Judah within 3 days. Verse 5. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. Now he has recently become the captain of the host. David gives him an order and expects it to be obeyed. Understandably so, he is the king. Amasa is the captain of the host. Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days. And be thou here present. What's not clear? It's very clear. It's very concise. Verse 5, so Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer. You have to really appreciate the urgency here in David. We have just put down a rebellion, and here is another rebellion right in front of us. Amasa, get the men and assemble them back here. David is trying to restore the kingdom. Amasa has been assigned the job of captain of the host. He's got responsibility to get the job done, and he delays. David, rightfully so, properly so, as a good leader, has people in position. This is normal, this is right, this is proper. And he's counting on these people to do their job. And so it is, he rightfully, understandably so, calls Amasa, "Would you please assemble the army?" Let's think about Amasa. He delays in doing what he's told to do. He was not all that long ago. I don't know the exact time frame, but very recently, apparently, because David is desperately trying to get back to Jerusalem. I don't think it was very long at all. Amasa was the captain of the army against David. Remember, he is a relative of David. This is a great big family feud. He is the commanding general, or was the commanding general, against David. Now think about this. These men of Judah who are now being cried to by Sheba rebel. And Amasa's looking at this saying, those are the very men I just led all that long ago, and now I have come over to the men of Judah against those men. This must have been a very interesting position for him to be in. He is now to lead the men of Judah against the men that he used to lead against Judah. Kind of complicates things, doesn't it? David didn't foresee this coming. Here he has the duty to fight and suppress the ones he just fought with and led into battle. I want you to consider what he is thinking, apparently. It's believable he is thinking about the bond that he had with these men. If you're willing to go into battle with somebody, I would think you start to have a camaraderie. They lost, if you will, the battle, yet they won because the rightful one that God wanted to be on the throne is on the throne. They're united, and David is doing everything he can to bring them back. And they're fighting again. How do you think Amasa is going to feel sending the men of Judah against the men of Israel to their death? I can't imagine any general relishes the thought of sending people into combat knowing very well many are going to die. And if certainly David doesn't want this, they're the very people he's trying to lead. They're God's people, and he's been called to be the one. It's not a pleasant situation. Here he has the job now to assemble the men of Judah so that they can kill, unfortunately, to put down the rebellion. Do you think he would also be a target in battle? These 10 tribes? They could look at him as a traitor. Can you also wonder if Amasa's thinking, I wonder if the men of Judah are going to really follow me in combat? You know, in the heat of the battle, if they don't trust him, is somebody going to assassinate me while all the arrows are flying around and the spears? Why, I mean, just one misguided arrow take Amasa out. How do I know the men of Judah are going to be with me? Maybe they think I'm a traitor too. Well, you know what? The truth is, it doesn't matter what he's thinking. He has a God-given responsibility to do right, as every man has that responsibility. But I think we also have to deal with the reality of life. People are people. He had a personal directive from the king. Verse 4, then said the king to Amasa. There was nothing, maybe the messenger didn't get it right. No, the messenger was the king. If he had any thoughts and doubts, why didn't he mention it to David? David, I really don't feel good about this. But he didn't, for whatever reason. He went as if he was going to assemble the people. The truth is, we don't know exactly why he delayed, but we do know this. He delayed. Maybe he was just a man that had no urgency. There are people like that. Ask them to do something, and it doesn't get done. The truth is, he was wrong because he disobeyed the king. You accepted the position to be the captain of the host. It's understood you're going to accept the responsibility that goes along with that. And we know that David was not pleased with the response of his delay. I want you to think again about the men of Judah for a minute. This man was leading the forces against them. He is now going to lead them against 10 tribes. You wonder if the men of Judah, or if Amasa thought of this. You know, David's nephew, not all that long ago, he led the men against the city of Rabbah into battle, and they retreated so that Uriah would intentionally die. Is that going to happen to us too? We are outnumbered. It's 10 tribes against 2. 2 Samuel 11:14, and it came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. David did this. David sent these men into battle where one man would intentionally die, and now David is sending men again into battle with the guy who once was heading the army against him. Who do you trust? You do see the problem, don't you? You talk about a tangled web. Verse 15, and he wrote in the letters saying, set ye Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle and retire ye from him that he may be smitten and die. Is this going to happen to us? Hey guys, remember? Remember when we went into battle? People do talk. Yeah, and Joab told us to retreat, but let Uriah out there to die. So it is, Joab, David's nephew, once was over that army. I mean, did he talk to his cousin Amasa? They kind of in the cahoots over things here? The command was given in 18:5, deal gently with my son. In verse 14, Joab said, I am not going to put up with this. He took 3 darts and put it through Absalom. And then he had his 10 young men slay Absalom. Joab then goes on. He verbally beats up on David for his grieving. He was right in many of the things that he said, but the way he did it was terribly wrong. And David took and put Joab out, put Amasa in. Chapter 19, verse 13, and say ye to Amasa, art not thou my bone and my flesh? Because David was related to Amasa, God do so to me and more also, if thou be not the captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. So we've got family strife. We've got national strife. We've got Sheba stirring things up. We've got the memory of people, what's going on. This chapter takes us from incredible chaos to the end of the chapter where there is law and order. It's true that Amasa helped to restore unity after the battle, but here he is a poor choice for leadership. Hence, it is likely that we would wonder, was it wrong for David to appoint Amasa to be the captain of the host? And here we would say the corrective lens of time. At the time, David looked at it and said, Amasa, I want you to be the captain of my army. David was looking to bring unity, and if David was willing to trust Amasa, he was willing to trust anybody else. Was David wrong? It's easy to criticize, but David was looking out for the well-being of the nation. Well, he didn't pray. He didn't this. He was a man. And the burdens on him were very real. Did you know leaders need prayer more than they need criticism? 1 Timothy 2:1, Paul wrote these words, I, Paul, exhort therefore first, supplications, prayers, intercessions, giving of thanks be made for all men, and then he cites for kings and for all that are in authority. It's easy to sit here and complain about leadership. Do you honestly get on your knees and say, dear God, put your hand upon that person, whatever authority you're thinking of, from local to national, from secular to whatever, they need prayer. And Paul wrote that when ungodly Rome was in power. Amasa was, I have to believe, honored, excited, when he was first given the opportunity, Amasa, I want you to be the captain of the host. I think it's believable he would have considered, am I going to be executed? Is this a trick? Is my uncle really telling me the truth here? And so it is, he was excited, I believe, to take the position. But soon thereafter, he saw the reality of responsibility that comes with leadership. I remember many, many, many years ago talking to a man who ran a landscaping company up in Chicago. And somehow the subject of authority and self-employment came up. And he said, people think I don't have a boss. He said, every customer is my boss. Profound statement. Amasa had trouble accepting the responsibility that came with leadership. Amasa accepted the notion that David had the authority to make him the captain of the host. Amasa accepted the notion that David had the authority to put Joab out of that office. Amasa had the rightful thinking that if I'm going to be the captain of the host, I have got a whole lot of men that I am going to be able to control. But Amasa seemed to have a problem that when David gave him a command, all of a sudden he didn't seem to respect the chain of command anymore. Folks, when you have a responsibility, it's important that we tend to it. Subordinates are not supposed to pick and choose which orders they obey. And in this case, here he is a leader subordinate. And leaders also have got things that they have to make sure that they tend to. As the landscaper was not just free to do what he wanted, he had to make sure he tended to those that he was responsible to. Let us think about some biblical guidelines that God has given us concerning leadership. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a steward is someone who has the oversight of something for somebody else, whether it be a building or an operation or a ministry or some type of thing. A steward has responsibility. Moreover, it is required in a steward," required, not suggested, "required that a man be found an expert." Error for emphasis. What is the first command that God says needs to be done for authority and leadership? Faithful. Is the person faithful? We would have to look back at Amasa and say, you know what? How faithful was he? He defected against David. It says found faithful. It has to be discovered, noticed. It has to be something that others see, that is a faithful man. Must be found faithful, and being faithful is in little things, the Bible commands us. Matthew 25:21, "His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many things." Pick people upon faithfulness, and then when they're faithful and prove themselves in little things, then they can be promoted to over bigger things. Because if a person, A, is not faithful, B, they're not going to be faithful over little things, and if they're not faithful over little things, they're not going to be faithful over big things. One of the worst things I have seen throughout the years in a church is an expert. Did you know that? The Bible tells us look for faithfulness. Because you can't tell an expert anything. They know more than you do. You see, the church is not an organization. The church is an organism. It's the body of Christ. Give me a faithful man any day. Give me a man that's been through the fire. Faithfulness takes time to be seen. Another good way to look for leadership, counsel. Proverbs 11:14, "Where no counsel is, the people fall." Get advice. "But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety." This is a biblical command to a wise person, a spiritual person. Get advice. Get advice. Okay? Like what? You tell me, what do you think is big enough that you ought to get advice on? Life. Get advice. Ask people. By the way, it's implied in there that you're going to ask people that are qualified to be asked. Well, I'm not going to ask him because I know what he's going to say. That's probably the very person you ought to go ask. Was Amasa a hasty decision? It's easy to armchair quarterback. Did David pray? Did God allow this? I don't know. I know this. We need to learn what the Bible says. You see, leadership is necessary, especially in difficult times. And in difficult times, a person's ability will rise, and you'll see what they're made of. Do you realize many times a president is defined by the problems he inherits? You have to wonder if we would have ever heard of Abraham Lincoln if it wasn't for the Civil War. I wonder what he would have been like in peacetime. We'll never know. We are defined many times by the problems that people see us go through. How do you respond to it? With a bad attitude? Do you rise to the occasion and lead? Whether it be your family or whatever. It can't be denied that Amasa turned against David. That's true. Was David wrong to extend kindness and mercy to Amasa, hoping it to be a blessing to bring the nation back? Folks, I'm not ready to stand here and say he was wrong. I'm not ready to stand here and say he was right. You see, David not only brought Amasa back, David also, don't forget, welcomed the whole army back. Was he so wrong to let those men keep their own leader? I'm not ready to condemn the man. What would I have done? What would you have done? If you put this man over your army, you just brought back 10 tribes. How did I know that the men of Judah, remember this, what were we told when they had their verbal bantering? The men of Judah were more fierce than men of Israel. I'll bet David was pretty mad at Judah. Why did you do that? Soft words turn away wrath, the Proverbs tell us. Grievous words stir up anger. Why did you do that? It's very believable there wouldn't have been a problem if the men of Judah would have been decent people. Who cares who escorts him over the Jordan? Get over it. I'm not ready to condemn him for this. Did you know that God is merciful to sinners? Has God been merciful to you? Dare we condemn David for being merciful? I guess I'd rather be found guilty of being merciful than erring on the side of not being merciful. Did you know that Jesus Christ knew that Judas was going to turn on him, and what did he do? He brought him into his inner circle and gave him the bag. He made him treasurer. Merciful. Judas, I love you. I know what you're going to do, but I am going to give you every chance to get saved. Was Jesus Christ merciful to Peter, knowing he was going to deny him? You bet. Did you know Jesus Christ was merciful to each and every one of us today? When I started this, at times I wavered back and forth whether I felt that David should not have taken Amasa, should have taken Amasa. The truth is, I don't know. I know this. We need to learn. Do the best we can. Do we judge a man for being merciful? It's a tough one. We saw that Amasa could have a lot of thoughts going through our minds. Do we not have a lot of thoughts going through our minds? Our past? Our failures, our doubts, our weaknesses? Those thoughts are not to be an excuse for wrongdoing, but they ought to provoke us to proper thinking, which is the Word of God. Dear God, I am not qualified for this decision. I need your wisdom. I need counsel. We are seeing here the reality of human leadership, and it breaks down. Well, that David should have never taken him. Who knows? The truth is God is in control, and he is over leadership. The truth is, human authority is God's plan. How he can take imperfect men to lead other imperfect men to do his perfect will is beyond me. Please explain it when you figure it. But it's the way it is. Let's consider Colossians 3:22. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. That's a powerful statement, you see, because God allowed that servant to be under that master. Did you know there is no human authority except by God? Psalm 75:6, for promotion cometh neither from east nor from west nor from south, but God is the judge. He puts down one, he sets up another. There is no authority except of God. Romans 13:1, the same principle. Let every soul, that includes all of us, be subject unto the higher powers, all of them. Why? For there's no power but of God. the powers that be are ordained of God, written to Christians under the Roman government who was feeding them to the lions in the Colosseum. God says, I am in control. And did you know that God works controlling government? Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart, his innermost thinking and convictions, is in the hand of the Lord. As rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he will. That water rushes down that river, and those banks say, nope, you're going this way. Nope, you're going this way. Nope, you're going this way. That's what God is doing to the king. We don't have a king, but we have authorities, and God is controlling authorities. Look at it from a different vantage point in Romans 13:4. For he, the authority, is a minister of God to thee for good, written about the Roman government that was feeding Christians to the lions in the Colosseum. This is an incredible chapter to go from chaos to incredible order, because God is in control. Did you know that when it comes to leadership and organization, problems climb up? What do I mean by that? Amasa failed to do his job, and it climbed up to David. It's my problem. When a subordinate fails to do their job, it goes to the next level. And if that boss doesn't handle it, it goes to the next level, and it goes up the chain. Problems climb up. Amasa was not tending to the army. David had to act. And what did he do? He put him out. David is already carrying enough burdens. And now his lack of promptness, his delay, gave David a problem that he had to deal with. You see, David was not supposed to go out and lead the army. He wanted the subordinate to do it. You do it, I put you there. Was David qualified? David was a man of war. David was more than qualified to do the job, but just like the apostles said, we can't be serving tables. David cannot be out there leading the army. He has got to tend to the nation overall. So he needed Amasa to do the job. But, alas, Amasa failed. And David, in verse 6 of chapter 20, David said to Abishai, this is his nephew, now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get in fenced cities and escape us. So it is. He was called to a job. He failed, and David had to pick another person. It needed prompt action, and David rose to the occasion. Abishai rose to the occasion, as we shall see. Verse 7, and there went out after him Joab's men, and the Cherethites, the Pelethites, and all the mighty men that went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. We needed leadership back in those days. We need leadership today. We will need leadership in the future. Let us learn from this chapter the importance of organized authority. This chapter goes from chaos to a government of imperfect men. And it was sure better than civil war.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.